Please join me for a dog's breakfast here on CFRU 93.3 FM on Saturday mornings from 10 to 11.
Guelph Wellington Women in Crisis is dedicated to ending violence against all women and children. We offer shelter, support, and advocacy, as well as a 24-hour phone line. We support women survivors of emotional, physical, sexual, and financial abuse in Guelph and Wellington County. Our crisis line in Guelph is 519-826-5710, and outside of Guelph is 1-800-265-SAFE. That's 1-800-265-7233. From there, someone can direct you to the most helpful program for a situation, whether that is Mary Ann's Place, our emergency shelter, the Sexual Assault Center, the Transitional Housing and Support Program, or the Rural Women's Support Program. The crisis line is also available to seek advice for someone else or to just speak to someone for support. For more information, check out Women in Crisis website at www.gwwomenincrisis.org or find us on Facebook. Again, the crisis line is 519-836-5710 for Guelph or 1-800-265-SAFE. That's 1-800-265-7233.
Got a lot of friends and got a lot of warrants too. I smoke a lot of weed, I pull a lot of good deeds, I pull a lot of robberies too. I'm gonna be loud, I'm gonna be rude, my lyrics explicit and lewd. I got the punk rock country attitude. We're gonna start a punk rock country band. With my gun and my beer, I'll be having no fear, I got a big joint in my hand. And the assholes in Nashville fall in the goddamn sea, I'll still be picking my brand of punk country.
Oi, 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 oi.
We got a lot of whiskey, got a lot of beer, and even got moonshine too. When I get drunk before the show, I never know how we'll do. Just got back from a criminal spree, and the Mounties are looking for me. And I'm right here picking my brand of punk country.
We're gonna start a punk rock country band.
With my gun and beer, I'll be having no fear, I got a big joint in my hand.
And the assholes in Asheville fall in the goddamn sea, I'll still be picking my brand of punk country.
Oi, 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 oi.
Got a lot of shows to play in a row, and I really hope people go. I got a lot of speeding and topic tickets because we never die slow. We don't give a damn, we're a country punk band right here, we'll make our stand. Now, you goddamn people, start to dance and clap your hands.
You're gonna start a punk rock country band.
With my gun and beer, I'll be having no fear, I got a big joint in my hand.
Till the assholes in Asheville fall in the goddamn sea, I'll still be picking my brand of punk country. We're gonna start a punk rock country band.
With my gun, I'll be having no fear, got a big joint in my hand.
The asshole, the national ball in the goddamn sea.
I'll still be picking my brand of punk country.
And that was Joey Only kicking off this edition of The Working Week. Welcome to The Working Week. Oh, what was that song? I guess it spoke for itself. Punk Rock Country Band by Joey Only. And Joey Only will be coming back to town in November. Rumored to be November the 12th. Still working on getting a place for Joey to play. So keep that in mind if you're a fan. And we certainly are here on The Working Week. As I said, this is The Working Week, CFRU 93.3 FM. Wasn't that a fantastic show before? That was a brand new show to CFRU. That's Pioneer Radio. And Kathleen and Kelly, the hosts, and some fantastic stuff coming down the pipe on your favorite campus community station right here. So, speaking of favorites, I know in the past I've spoken about radical marching bands. It's not a pet project of mine. I have put out the shout out before to various parts, and it's one of those ideas. Usually comes out over, Saturday night cocktails that, hey, we should start a radical marching band. And it doesn't happen. So I'm going to put this out there, sort of a challenge to those of you listening, that this town needs Royal City Radical Marching Band. Name as yet undecided as to what it will be. So here is some stuff to inspire you from our friends of the National Radio Project in California. And we have two pieces for you today. This one is Marching to the Beat of Their Own Drums. Marching bands from North Carolina to Portland, Oregon are bringing humor, politics, and a unique sound to the streets, many of them with a message of social justice. Once a year, many of these street bands travel to Massachusetts for the Honk Festival, which is coming up very soon. Sarah Danson has more about the festival and the historical and political traditions that fuel their music, and this is a great little synopsis of what radical marching music has been, and of course will be in the future, when, of course, our town starts its very own radical marching band. So here's Sarah now.
Davis Square is filled with musicians carrying a variety of shiny brass instruments. They look as colorful as their music sounds, and they are wearing what seems like the contents of a child's play closet. One guy is wearing a skin-tight lime green bunny suit. Musicians are warming up their instruments while observers mill about, taking in the beautiful day. They're all waiting for the start of the 4th annual Honk Festival, a weekend-long event dedicated to street bands. That's the Pink Puffers. They're just one of the 28 alternative marching bands represented here. These groups of musical artists are also known as radical brass bands, marching bands, do-it-yourself brass bands, activist street bands, the clandestine brass underground, and honk bands. Sarah Valentine, a dancer with the Hungry March Band in New York, prefers a broader term, global brass. She says the movement is influenced by a do-it-yourself punk aesthetic and attitude.
Anybody can make music, pick up a guitar, play three chords. This is the same idea. Like, anybody can play music, pick up a brass instrument, pick up a drum, choreograph a simple dance routine, and you can have this community project that's exciting and fun and participatory and uplifting and grassroots and something that people can share together.
The music these bands play isn't what you'd hear in a high school marching band. It's loud, it's primarily heard on the street, and it takes from brass music from around the world. Members of the bands are generally in their 20s or 30s, and they're having fun.
Hungry March Band didn't start to, like, create a revolution. Hungry March Band was formed by a bunch of people that wanted to make noise and make a spectacle.
While some bands may be more interested in revolution than others, just the very nature of them challenges the status quo, says Daniel Lang Levitsky of the Rude Mechanical Orchestra, or the RMO, in Brooklyn.
The way that I think about it is that, broadly in general, any street brass project, whether or not it thinks it is a political project in the way that it takes up public space, doesn't rely on the apparatus of a club, amplification, etc., and the way that it's a fundamentally participatory musical experience. But within that broader realm of street bands, there's the group of bands that RMO is part of, which are explicitly political projects that exist to support social justice movements.
The Rude Mechanical Orchestra is one of these bands. Lang Levitsky says that from day one, the band has played to support many different causes and has risked arrest to do so.
We talk about the band as having formed for the 2004 mobilization against the Republican National Convention in New York, which was mainly focused on the one hand on anti-war organizing and on the other hand on a set of local issues mainly affecting poor and working class communities of color. But before the band existed and had a name and a structure, its actual birth point was for the earlier in 2004 March for Women's Lives in D.C. We tend to get talked about as much more of a group with a history of working on anti-war stuff and on the class and race issues in the city, but paired with that from the very beginning has been feminist and queer and trans issues, which also very much reflects the makeup of the band.
Lang Levitsky says the RMO and other street bands connect to larger political movements, both past and present, by playing their music.
The history of solidarity between movements in different places has been a history of learning each other's music and singing together. I mean, I come from a red diaper family. I grew up singing radical songs with slightly butchered pronunciation in four or five languages. And that's something that if you talk to folks who were, who've been part of radical movements pretty much anywhere, that gets talked about as what makes movements connect to each other is in part being able to sit down with folks and sing together and play music together.
In the past decade, political street bands have become a vibrant part of many protests. Many were inspired by the Infernal Noise Brigade at the 1999 WTO protests in Seattle. But the history of these bands goes back much further. In the 1960s, one notable group used brass music in anti-war protests. Michelle Hardisi was a founding member of the Rude Mechanical Orchestra.
One group that was based in New York City back in the 60s and is now up in rural Vermont is Bread and Puppet Theater, who have always combined political theater, puppet theater, with street music. They've always had a brass band playing along with their actions and with their shows. They started in the Lower East Side back in the 1960s doing anti-war, Vietnam anti-war actions, and have continued to this day, coming to and inspiring others to do combined kind of performance, cultural performance with political action.
In the United States, brass music is very often associated with military music. Even in that context, though, it has had major social influences. In World War I, the famed Harlem Hellfighters, or the 369th Infantry Regiment, was the first African-American regiment. They were also highly decorated by the French, and they had a brass band led by James Reese Europe that brought ragtime music to Europe for the first time. But perhaps the most famous street bands in America are New Orleans bands. These bands often played at funerals around the turn of the century. They were arranged by social aid and pleasure clubs, which were founded to give newly freed slaves loans, legal counsel, and education. Balkan brass is also a strong influence. The songs of the Romani, more commonly referred to as gypsies, are another musical favorite of these bands because of their link to oppression. This is the Hungry March Band's version of Kalashnikov, the theme to the Serbian film Underground. But perhaps the most universally played song by political alternative marching bands is Bella Ciao. Bella Ciao is an anti-fascist Italian song about a partisan fighter who's preparing to die for liberty. It's a well-known protest song and appeals to the political nature of some of the bands. Here are the Brass Messengers of Minneapolis playing their version.
Una mattina mi son svegliato. Oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Una mattina mi son svegliato e ho trovato l'invaso.
The purpose of these bands is good.
Michelle Hardesty.
It's like bringing music back to the street, back to just like public spaces. It's celebrating public spaces. It's celebrating the potential for anyone to pick up an instrument and learn it and play together in a big band.
Daniel Lang-Levitsky of the Rude Mechanical Orchestra.
There's a wonderful line of Tony Kidd Bambara's that the task of the revolutionary artist is to make revolution irresistible. And that is a lot of what we do.
For Making Contact, I'm Sarah Danson.
Ciao, Bellows. No, wait. Don't leave yet. So are you inspired yet? Are you inspired to start your very own radical marching band in these here parts? I hope so. So that was part one. You're listening to The Working Week here on CFRU 93.3 FM. And part two is the story of a famous, shall we say perhaps infamous, radical marching band, the Infernal Noise Brigade. While there are now dozens of street bands around the country and abroad, which would include us, I guess we are abroad, one from Seattle is known to have been an inspiration. The Infernal Noise Brigade debuted at the Seattle WTO protests in 1999. I know some of you out there will remember that. You remember that? You remember that last century, 1999? Yeah, well, Jill Friedberg from KBCS in Seattle has the story of the life and death of the Infernal Noise Brigade.
On November 30th, 1999, protesters locked down the Seattle streets and shut out the WTO delegates. And for 5 days, the Infernal Noise Brigade helped keep them going. Jenna Barrett joined the IMB for its Seattle debut.
Demonstrations in general, I think, can get bogged down in walking through the streets and sometimes retracing your own steps, and it can feel really repetitive and you get very tired. And music is inspirational. It gives people something to march to.
When the 18-member band rounded the corner flanked by thousands of demonstrators, their appearance inspired the crowds as much as their music did.
We had two rifle twirlers and we had four flag bearers.
Yi Ching was a member of the Infernal Noise Brigade's flag and rifle corps.
Our initial colors started off as being green and black, and one of the uniform pieces that we had were furry black kind of Russian-style hats.
The rifles, of course, weren't real. It was all part of what Jenna Barrett called their playfully pseudo-military look.
When you added the boots that we all wore and the gas masks and the cloths that we used to cover our faces, I think we looked pretty militant, and that certainly wasn't our original intent. Like, that kind of came out of the pragmatism part of it.
Their uniforms had to be pragmatic. The band often placed itself on the front lines between police and protesters.
By staying there and just holding our ground, playing music, it helped to keep people there as well. It became more of a force to be reckoned with, in a sense.
In the months leading up to the WTO protests, the Infernal Noise Brigade rehearsed along Seattle's industrial waterfront, surrounded by 40-foot shipping containers. When it rained, they played music under a highway overpass. Yi Ching attended those early rehearsals.
Many of the members that became part of the Infernal Noise Brigade all had some type of experience in social activism. but for the most part, none of us had been in any group where there was marching involved. We had people who came and advised us in how to march. We had a woman who came in and taught us how to do rifle twirling, and that was incredibly helpful because, you know, a lot of us had no idea how to do some of this stuff.
Despite being on the front lines, not a single member of the Infernal Noise Brigade was among the 600 people arrested during those 5 days of protest. It was a watershed moment. The WTO meetings were successfully shut down, and globalization became a household word.
At that historical moment, we felt like we had a tool, and we should use it.
Gray Philistine was one of the founding members of the INB.
It seemed like we were actually gaining ground. We were making an impact. We were actually making a hell of a lot of noise, and they had to listen to it.
It changed my life. And the Infernal Noise Brigade specifically absolutely gelled that day.
That was just such a springboard for the INB. It inspired us to want to continue doing it, to provide that energy in other cities.
After the Seattle protests, large mobilizations against global financial institutions erupted all over the globe, and the INB was there. The band traveled to Prague, Mexico, Scotland, New York.
It allowed me the opportunity to express the way that I feel about authority.
Ronika Sanyal was teaching martial arts to sex workers in India before she joined the INB as a vocalist.
Authority has no place in creating beauty or vision or, you know, communities that are sustainable in this world. And that was one thing that the INB was committed to doing, is not respecting authority.
For I Ching, traveling abroad with the Infernal Noise Brigade was also an opportunity to learn.
We got to experience what it was like to mobilize with people from other countries. To be able to participate and show solidarity was such like this wonderful experience. I remember I just almost wanted to cry.
I left the INB for several reasons. Some of them are definitely political.
Throughout the INB's 6-year run, consecutive waves of band members came and went. Many moved on for personal reasons. Others, like Ronika Sanyal, left in part for ideological reasons. Within the resistance movements for which the INB provided a soundtrack, as well as within the band, people began asking this question. Was it effective to travel to protests around the world, or did it make more sense to work locally to address root causes of social and economic injustice?
I didn't feel that where the INB was at that time was where I felt like I was politically, and the things that I was interested in doing and the work that I was interested in doing weren't reflected. Which is not to say that the INB wasn't crucial, just more that my role in the INB wasn't crucial.
It became a system of diminishing returns, like anything.
Gray Philistine again.
The first couple times, really powerful, really strong. Each time you go, you feel like people are getting tired of these tactics. You reach a point at which you're like, no, this doesn't work anymore. And actually that means, what is our purpose as a band? And should we continue to exist?
The Infernal Noise Brigade decided to disband in 2006. Naturally, it didn't end quietly.
The actual funeral party was one of the best events I've ever participated in my life. We had like a whole weekend-long funeral party, played with like 40 people in the band, almost everyone who had ever played in the group. Had a giant meal together. I mean, it was just a perfect way to end this whole project.
4 years after the Infernal Noise Brigade's funeral, Jenna Barrett insists that music and art still have a vital role to play in resistance movements.
I felt like we'd done a lot of good work. I felt like the people that we had supported and the work that we'd done had really made a difference. In fact, one of my strongest tenets of belief personally is that we live in a nation that has the strongest military in the world. We are never going to be able to outfight them, ever. What we do have is our capacity for play, our capacity for joy, our capacity for comedy, and they'll never get it. They'll never get it. They'll never be able to fight it.
For Making Contact, I'm Jill Friedberg with KBCS in Seattle.
So there you have it. Like anything, bands come and bands go, but the Infernal Noise Brigade lives on. And of course, radical marching music lives on, radical marching bands. So I'm going to leave you with a piece from the Brass Liberation Orchestra there from the San Francisco Bay Area. And this was a recent action of theirs. It was in a hotel that was the workers were trying to get their first, I think it was their first collective agreement. And we'll let the piece speak for itself. You can Google it. Just Google Brass Liberation Orchestra or go to YouTube and look it up, because it's not only is it great to listen to, it is a marvel to be seen. So you've been listening to The Working Week here on CFRU 93.3 FM, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care, folks.
Get caught in a bad hotel. Oh, no.
Refusing to agree to fair contract standards and paper.